Well, I actually spent a lot of time in the library getting this course ready. I came to the New York Public Library and the Boston Public Library. I found all sorts of old, interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, everything was on the shelf. It was easy to find and so forth. And I found, for example, in the 20s, that there was an amateur television society in Boston where people were building their own television sets. Mm-hmm. Some companies were making kits, Nipkow disc mm-hmm. kits and all of that. And I just found it just tremendously interesting. And I, you know, I mentioned some of that historical stuff when I started to speak today, because most people really don't know about mm-hmm. it. That, you know, who knows today that facsimile is older than the telephone?
Mm-hmm.
But it is. Anyway, I was a professor at MIT from 1959 until 1990 uh-huh. when I retired. I got tenure in 1968. And then I got promoted to full professor. For a few years, I was the Bernard Gordon professor, an honorific post where I was trying to get some more practicality into mm-hmm. the curriculum, which had become a science-based curriculum. I have very strong views about engineering education, and I'm very happy that I don't have to worry about it anymore. You know, since I'm no longer a faculty member, or at least, you know, I can go to faculty meetings, I can talk all I want, but I have no responsibility in that area. But, you know, a science-based curriculum, when it was first introduced at MIT, was taught by engineering professionals. These were guys who had immense amounts of practical experience building things.
Mm-hmm.
They could do a very good job. However, when a science-based curriculum is taught by people who graduated from a science-based curriculum, the contact with reality disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has very serious consequences for the country. Places like MIT attract the very best students. But engineering, the level of engineering quality in the United States is not very high. That's why bridges fall down and why American cars aren't as good as Japanese cars. They're getting better. But it's because we don't have the best people doing that. The best people do the best work. But in the United States at the present time, the best people go into other fields. They don't go into engineering.
Mm-hmm.
They become lawyers. Of all the professions that I deal with, I spend a lot of time with lawyers, the average intelligence of the lawyers is higher than any other profession. Now, that's too bad because a lot of the work they do is non-productive.
Mm-hmm.
Then a lot of very bright people go into medicine, where you can make an immense amount of money. And a lot of bright people go into business. They get MBAs and so forth, and they pull down a lot of money. Now, I have one of my wife's relatives, young kid, went to law school, not a top-flight law school either. He wasn't that smart. But he started off at a very prestigious company at $70,000. And he was teaching in China for a while, teaching English in China, which was very enterprising of him. And he came home with a Chinese girlfriend. They're married and have children, and she's a lawyer too. So they have two lawyers in the family making a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, quite a few of my students are making a lot of money too. But they have a lot more education than the lawyers have. You know, they've all had 8, 9 years of school.
Mm-hmm.
And image processing is a very hot field. So students who have specialized in that and come from good schools can pull down very, very respectable salaries. But the people who design and the mundane products, the automobiles, mm-hmm. the bridges and the roads and so forth. They're the Wentworth Institute graduates. It's just too bad. I don't see that situation changing at all.
Yeah.
Now, my efforts to introduce some reality into the MIT curriculum were a total failure, and I really put my heart and soul into it for 3 years, just because I thought it was important.
Mm-hmm.
And my colleagues totally rejected it.